Welcome to Food Psych, a podcast dedicated to critiquing diet and wellness culture and answering your questions about intuitive eating and the anti-diet approach. I'm your host, Christy Harrison, and I'm a registered dietitian, certified intuitive eating counselor, journalist, and author of the books Anti-Diet, The Wellness Trap, and the new Emotional Eating, Chronic Dieting, Binge Eating, and Body Image Workbook, which are all available wherever you get your books or at ChristyHarrison.com/books. That's ChristyHarrison.com/books. And by the way, on this show, we avoid diet culture details like weight and calorie numbers, but we don't censor swear words or other adult language, so listener discretion is advised. Hey there, welcome back to Food Psych. This episode is a Q&A I shared on my other podcast, Rethinking Wellness. It went live there over 12 months ago, and I'm excited to bring it to you here now. If you want to get my most up-to-date content, please become a paid subscriber at rethinkingwellness.substack.com. Meanwhile, I can't wait to share this Q&A with you in just a moment. Intuitive Eating Fundamentals, the online course I created to help you make peace with food, is now available as an evergreen, self-paced course with lifetime access. It teaches you how to recognize and reject diet culture, take pleasure in food and stop fighting your desires, tune back into your body's signals of hunger and fullness, end the restrict binge or restrict rebound cycle, navigate emotional eating and learn new coping skills, and most importantly, I think, avoid turning intuitive eating into a sneaky diet. Sign up now for instant access to hundreds of hours of supportive content, including 13 modules on the principles of intuitive eating, deep dives into how to handle common issues that come up when you're trying to make peace with food, special meditations, journal exercises, and more. Get all the details and sign up at ChristyHarrison.com/course or click the link in the show notes. If you've gotten something out of the conversations here, please consider supporting the podcast for a few bucks a month. The best way to do that is by signing up as a paid subscriber on Substack at rethinkingwellness.substack.com. If you do, you'll also get extended interviews and bonus segments, ad-free episodes, subscriber-only essays and Q&As, and more. Just go to rethinkingwellness.substack.com and enter your email address. And thank you so much for your support. And now, without any further ado, let's get into it. I've been thinking a lot about this episode from last year, where I shared some personal thoughts on how anxiety impacts the gut and offered a perspective on how to handle digestive distress that's triggered by stress without getting pulled down wellness culture rabbit holes, especially if you have a history of disordered eating. This episode was a fan favorite, and I wanted to share it with you in case you're going through something similar right now. January 16th, my husband is interviewing for jobs. It's a welcome development after he was unexpectedly laid off at the end of 2023, the culmination of an already awful year. And yet, I'm somehow more anxious after he advances to the next round of interviews than I was when he had no leads at all. The problem for me is that each opportunity presents a new potential future unfolding for us, and I don't do well with multiple potential futures. Give me a few possibilities and I'm fine, but the more the unknowns proliferate, the more the gears of my mind will try to grind out an answer. I lie awake at night, unable to control their whirring. Does he take the safe office job with a decent salary and opportunity for growth in the company, where he'd work late and have a nearly two-hour commute, throwing me back into solo parenting every weeknight plus occasional Saturdays? Would he make enough in that job that we could splurge on a quote-unquote mother's helper to come one night a week to help me keep from losing my shit? Why in 2024 do we still call them mother's helpers? Why are moms still disproportionately the ones needing this kind of help? I try to resist picking up my phone, knowing that it will only lead to making lists and spreadsheets that pull me further from the sleep I so desperately need. I take deep breaths and picture stepping off the roller coaster of my thoughts, then watching them continue their frantic ride without me. But the knowledge that my phone is there next to me, in the drawer of my nightstand, burns a hole in my brain. I open the drawer and start tapping out calculations, comparisons, questions as he tosses and turns next to me. Does he pursue the job nearby and get a bigger salary with more responsibility and unpredictable hours in a stodgy environment that I know would hurt his soul? How much time would I still spend solo? Is it a big enough company that he could get job protection if he ever took family leave? Does he move into a field where he has less experience with a lower salary but a decent bonus and better prospects down the line, plus the ability to work from home? Does the savings and commuting costs make up for the difference in wages? How does the bonus factor in? I'm not even the one who's interviewing, and yet I spend days in these quandaries, undersleeping and overinvesting in imagined lives I know will never lead. Where is the line between interdependence and codependency? Unsurprisingly, my IBS is flaring up. Anxiety and lack of sleep have always made my gut rumble and my throat burn, but this is on a whole other level. It feels like a deep, jagged canyon has opened up in my center, tumbling down to a roiling ocean below. I'm often so bloated that I have to unbutton my jeans anytime I sit down, although I've deliberately sized up and the waistband is loose when I put them on in the morning. Yes, I could wear leggings or sweatpants, but it's winter in the Northeast and I need something to ward off the biting winds on daycare drop-offs and pickups. Jeans are the only pants in my wardrobe that fit the bill. I try to keep the open zipper hidden by long sweatshirts. If my daughter ever catches a glimpse, she doesn't hesitate to point it out. "Mama, your button!" I flash back to my own childhood when I did the same thing to my mom, at an older age and in a harsher tone, rolling my eyes and shaking my head with embarrassment at the sight of her unzipped fly peeking out from under her shirt. I silently apologize to her, aware now that the real shame belongs to an industry which, in more than 30 years, still hasn't managed to make jeans that accommodate bellies like ours. Fluctuating bellies, birthing bellies, irritable bellies, human bellies. They're treated like personal failings that we're solely responsible for correcting, reversing, erasing. And if we can't, then we're doomed to be forever furtive in our attempts to accommodate them. What if we don't want to erase them? Where are the quote-unquote performance fabrics that give our abdomens ample room to expand and contract without constricting or bunching? And why do even my stretchy jeans feel like they have some kind of corsety compression fabric in the midsection? You might wonder what I'm doing nutrition-wise to manage all this digestive distress. Am I cutting out processed foods? Am I avoiding gluten or dairy? Upping my weekly consumption of plants? Going plant-based entirely? 15 years ago, I likely would have done all of the above, and my relationship with food would have become even more disordered than it already was back then. But not anymore. Today, I'm not changing my eating because I know that food is not the problem in the first place. The real issue, the quote-unquote root cause of my digestive troubles, the one left by Occam's razor when all the other wellness culture BS is cut away, is the stress. To trust my gut is to recognize how stress is impacting me and not to let hyped-up ideas about gut health take hold. I haven't always felt this way. I used to get furious when doctors suggested my problems were due to stress rather than to some physical cause like a food intolerance. And it's true that not everything can be chalked up to stress. Some symptoms have a different cause. Sometimes it is a food allergy. Sometimes it's a tumor. Sometimes it's disordered eating wreaking havoc on our guts. But sometimes, after we've gone to countless doctors and done multiple tests to rule out other causes, it turns out that the source of our digestive troubles is, at least in part, the pressure and anxiety that so many of us live with in this culture, day in and day out. As skeptical as I am of all the hype about the gut-brain axis, specifically the increasingly strident claims that the gut microbiome determines our mental health, which we've discussed here before, I'm also intimately familiar with the fact that our digestive systems often respond to stress by shutting down. So, how do we handle digestive distress that's triggered by stress without getting pulled down wellness culture rabbit holes, particularly if we have a history of disordered eating? I certainly don't have all the answers, but I have learned a few things from navigating these issues both personally and professionally over the years. Here are 9 questions that I've found helpful to ask when dealing with a flare-up. Number 1, is this situation partly due to forces beyond my control? The backdrop to my angst about where my husband ends up working is that we live in an unforgiving capitalist system where our ability to take care of ourselves and our families is tied up in having a job. At a fundamental level, employment is an issue of survival. So, of course, this is a stressful situation that's causing me to lose sleep and feel sick to my stomach. Simply recognizing that my stress is due in part to systemic issues makes me feel less alone and less likely to blame myself for something I can't control. Sure, I have some coping skills that can help my anxious gut feel a little bit better, like the ones we'll discuss, But at the end of the day, there's only so much I can do to manage my body's totally understandable responses to a difficult situation. Recognizing the larger forces at play helps me have more self-compassion, which in turn helps reduce my anxiety. Number two, am I eating enough and often enough? GI issues like bloating, gas, and pain can understandably cause me to eat less than I need, but usually that just makes everything worse. My own eating disorder recovery and my work as a disordered eating dietitian have taught me that eating regular meals and snacks helps keep our digestive systems moving along smoothly, and that I need to eat regularly even when I don't feel like it. I try to remind myself that intuitive eating isn't about only eating when you're hungry. Sometimes it's about eating for self-care, even when hunger signals are absent or masked by GI symptoms. Number three, am I falling into wellness traps? There's so much gut hype and so many false promises about gut health and wellness culture that it's important to stay vigilant. Years ago, I fell for the claim that loading up on vegetables supposedly alkalizes an acid stomach or soothes the gut. Today, I've realized that sometimes I was actually bloated and gassy from eating too much fiber in the first place, especially when I was trying to follow a quote-unquote whole food plant-based diet, and that adding more veggies only exacerbated the situation. Now when my digestion is off, I try to eat what sounds good to me instead of following the veggies will fix everything dogma. And I do my best to be skeptical of other supposed wellness culture cures that cross my radar. Number four, what are my right now coping skills? Meditation, yoga, taking walks, journaling, spending time with people I love and time in nature, all of those things have been incredibly helpful to my long-term mental health and by extension, my digestion. And yet it's easy for them to fall by the wayside when I'm stressed and strapped for time. To some extent, I think that's inevitable, and I try not to make this one more reason to blame myself. Instead, I think about what I can do right now that will help me feel a little bit better. Is it taking a deep breath or 30 seconds to stand up and stretch? Looking at a cute picture of my daughter? Thinking about a happy memory? Jotting down a quick note about how I'm feeling or a compassionate word to myself? Looking away from my computer and out the window. Even if the bigger coping skills aren't available to me in stressful periods of life, I still have access to some of these small moments of peace. Number five, what over-the-counter or prescription meds can I use for symptom relief? I used to try to avoid all medication and treat my digestive issues quote-unquote naturally, mostly through food and supplements, which led to seriously disordered eating and only made my symptoms worse. I've since learned that conventional medicines exist for a reason. Not only are they effective in ways that food and other wellnessy remedies simply are not, but they're also regulated for safety and efficacy in ways that supplements aren't. For me, over-the-counter meds like antacids or calcium carbonate, anti-gas tablets like simethicone, stool softeners like docusate sodium, and acid blockers like famotidine have been incredibly helpful for dealing with flare-ups of IBS and acid reflux, with few to no side effects. I've had to talk to my doctor about how these might interact with other medications I'm on, like my thyroid medicine, which has to be taken at least 4 hours apart from any calcium-containing meds like antacids, but with a little planning, I can use them without any problem. And I've found that taking meds is far better for my overall well-being than trying to go the quote-unquote natural route. Number six, are my clothes too tight? I used to wear high-waisted jeans or slightly compressive leggings without a thought for my poor digestive organs. But I know how that movie ends, and I just can't do it anymore. As I mentioned, these days I'm a big fan of sizing up and unbuttoning my jeans as needed. When I'm trying to look more put together, I sometimes use quote-unquote maternity waistband extenders with a piece of fabric that hides the open zipper. Though again, what I think we really need are jeans designed to ebb and flow throughout the day with our bellies. How much pain and bloating could we avoid simply by cutting out compressive waistbands? How many IBS flare-ups are shapewear-induced? I'd love to see some data on this. Number seven, am I blaming food for a non-food-related problem? I used to do this all the time. Now I try to recognize everything other than food that affects my digestion, including stress, lack of sleep, chronic conditions like my Hashimoto's thyroiditis, side effects from medications like occasional antibiotics or the Paxlovid I took when I had COVID, hormonal ups and downs, and any other changes or disruptions in routine. I make an effort to address these other factors to the extent that I can, instead of pointing the finger at food. Number eight, am I getting too caught up in tracking symptoms? I try to be aware of what's going on in my body, and sometimes that might mean paying closer attention for a few days, especially when the symptoms are too loud to ignore. But wellness culture can inspire a level of detail and symptom tracking that I ultimately find very unhelpful. I've learned that I do not need to log everything I put in my mouth and how that relates to every ache, pain, or bowel movement. For me, that level of analysis just increases anxiety. If I catch myself getting hyper-focused on my symptoms, I try to ease up and let my body do its thing without so much scrutiny. Number 9, am I predicting the future based on the pain of the present? When I'm experiencing a periodic flare-up of digestive issues or other chronic health conditions for that matter, it can feel like it's never going to end, like this is just how things are forever. But I try to remind myself that that's not true. I've lived through moments like this before, and I will again. That ebb and flow is the reality of living with chronic conditions, for better or worse. Of course, I deserve to seek out care and support for my symptoms, and accepting the inevitability of ups and downs doesn't mean giving up on feeling better. But it does mean knowing that sometimes, when I've already taken steps to care for myself as best I can, I don't actually need to do anything to feel better, other than allow time to pass and trust that I will. So that's our show. If you found this podcast helpful, I'd be so grateful if you take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. You can see all the places to subscribe at ChristyHarrison.com/subscribe. That's ChristyHarrison.com/subscribe. If you're looking for help healing your own relationship with food, grab my free audio guide, 7 Simple Strategies for Finding Peace and Freedom with Food. Just go to ChristyHarrison.com/strategies to get it. That's ChristyHarrison.com/strategies. To get full show notes and a transcript of this episode, go to ChristyHarrison.com/foodpsych. And to get the transcript, find the episode page and scroll down to the bottom to enter your email address. A big thanks to Softer Sounds for audio editing and production, and to administrative assistant Julianne Witasek for helping me out with all the moving parts that go into producing this show. Our album art was photographed by Abby Moore Photography, and the logo was designed by Melissa Alam. Our theme song was written and performed by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs, and I'm your host and executive producer, Christy Harrison. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, stay psyched.